Hello and welcome to the 33rd episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, the 9th of October, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening or watching live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Tony.
Good evening, Alan.
Good evening, Tony. Laura.
Hiya.
Hiya. And Mark.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Hi.
It's very much like an Alan Partridge. Yeah. How are we all?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. Too bad. Yeah.
Happy birthday to Tony for whenever it was his birthday.
An undisclosed amount of days ago, yes.
Right, okay. Yes.
Mainly because we had to get into the Julian calendar and things again. It'll get very complicated.
Oh, God.
But thank you very much. Yes, we're going to have some birthday cake later, I think.
Awesome. And people who are watching live can see us eat cake.
Yes, they can.
Brilliant. Okay.
You don't want me to put a test card up while we're eating cake?
No.
There was a very, very interesting video of you put online in honour of your birthday.
Tony didn't put it online.
Yeah. My parents, well, specifically my dad, conspired with Laura to put that online as a birthday treat for me.
It was awesome. It was the best video I have seen in a long time featuring Michaela Strachan.
Your massive personal collection of Michaela Strachan videos.
Yeah, I've downloaded it.
Okay. So it was from me when I was about, I guess, 13, 12 maybe. And
it was 12.
Thank you.
We should put that video in the show notes.
Yeah, so people might know,
because they
about.
Might not have seen it. You know,
I don't think it
got particularly wide
distribution.
So I think we need to fix that and embed it directly in the every episode from now on.
Which every episode, which won't hit Planet Ubuntu and get quite a few.
And the problem is that embedded videos on planets don't work very well. So what we'll have to do is screen cap the best bit and embed that and make it a link to the video. I think that's probably the best thing.
Well, that's good. So thank you for giving so much thought.
For some value of best.
178 views at the moment.
I think we can fix that. Let's get on with the show.
Hello, and this week we've got lots of news, so we've picked what we think are the most interesting. So first up, Privacy Not Prism campaign. Big Brother Watch Open Rights Group English PN. What's that stand for? Privacy something something. And internet campaigner Constance Kurtz are challenging the UK government's surveillance of our data at the European Court of Human Rights.
Well.
Yeah, so Prism is the scheme that was revealed by the leaks from Edward Snowden, which is one of these mass internet monitoring schemes. I think Prism is the one that came up with by the UK, GCHQ in the UK, and there are NSA schemes as well in the US. So people decided that it's not a very good thing.
Mm.
Although, just today, actually, I think it was the head of MI5.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, Andrew, what's his face? Yeah,
Parker. That's was sort of saying, no, it's really a good
thing.
You
really need to be very afraid.
But yes. I think even Stella Rimington doesn't agree. That's a good thing.
She was the head of MI6.
Six, yeah.
So what did Andrew, what's his face, say, Parker?
I'm trying to summarise him accurately, but basically he was saying that it's a necessary thing and that by leaking the details of this, Edward Snowden has given the terrorists a massive advantage because they know what facilities they have now and they can avoid them.
Right.
And
isn't that security through obscurity?
Yeah, kind of.
And actually, I read something the other day that said that terrorists don't use those methods of communication anyway because they figure they're going to be booked.
Yeah, I mean, it's like saying that they would. It's an advantage because, sorry, it's an advantage to the terrorists because they now know that they have this monitoring system. Whereas the reason that they presumably didn't think they did before was that it was so unfeasible and wrong that they would have it that the terrorists wouldn't think they had it. So
but
it's
then,
kind of justifying it through its own failure in a way.
While in practice they didn't, they assumed they had it anyway.
Yeah. Right.
It was only the rest of us that didn't.
So I recently saw a video of Jacob Applebaum, who works on the Tor project and is linked to WikiLeaks and has had discussions with Julia Assange. He gave evidence to European Parliament. Lengthy video conversation between him and MEPs, and I think Alan Rushbrigger, the Guardian editor, was there.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to watch and hear directly from Jacob about how these schemes are alleged to work and what access they have, and in a nutshell, why we should be worried about these things.
It was quite interesting. David Cameron was asked to review the new film that Benedict Cumberbatch plays Julian Assange in.
Fifth Estate.
He only got to see the first part of the film, apparently, but he liked Julian Assange's early work.
Before he got all mainstream and popular.
Yeah.
The book was much better.
He liked it when they were revealing the corruption of African governments.
Right.
But when it becomes our home stuff, not so keen.
Yeah, fancy that.
Interesting, yeah.
The 1 millionth Raspberry Pi has been made in the UK.
Excellent.
The first million. It just feels like there's bazillions of the things out there.
There's been about 175 million made, but this is the millionth that was made in the UK because they were made in China initially.
Oh, right.
They're made in Sony's factory in Wales. Yes.
Why did they move from China to Wales?
Because they wanted it, because it was invented and designed in England. They wanted to keep it as an in-house thing.
There's a big thing about doing that in the US as well. Companies are using this as a marketing thing to say it was, you know how Apple products have on the back. I don't know if you've ever seen an Apple product.
No.
Tony, I'll tell you. On the back, it'll say something like "Designed in California by Apple," but everyone knows that the thing is actually manufactured in China.
Yes, you
know,
by children.
And so there's this big push to get things manufactured locally, but the problem is obviously the cost.
Yeah. I was going to ask, has that affected the cost?
Well, I think because they've basically, because it's a charity thing, that Sony have done a deal with them to keep it within the costs that they can afford, basically.
Also, by this point, they'll know they've got the demand.
Yes, that's
true.
It's
less of a risk, isn't it?
Okay, well, it's good news. Yeah. So, presumably, this first 17 million were made in China and the
750,000 were made in China, and then the other million are made here.
But how many are there globally then?
175,000. No, 1 million. 1.75 million. 1.75 million.
That's clear as mud. Thanks, Mark.
Maths is hard. Let's go shopping.
Yes. But related to this, the BBC have also announced a new initiative to bring coding into every home, business, and school in the UK.
Yay.
And the director of the BBC did this presentation with lots of celebrities, like, you know, Stephen Fry. And
was Dara O'Brien in it?
No, Brian Cox was, though. So fans of Stargazing Live won't be disappointed.
Brian Cox, if wet, Dara O'Brien.
In that video, the BBC director of Future Media said that they are looking at bringing together different organisations that are already involved in coding. So that sounds like that they're probably going to be looking at, you know, talking to the Raspberry Pi Foundation, maybe organisations like Code Club or Apps for Good, who are already doing this.
Some actually on the website.
Oh, did they?
Notably, Code Club wasn't among them.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, interesting. Some others who do similar related work.
Yeah.
But I think this is good in a way. I mean, we've been calling for this. But then the flip side is, what about all those people who have already been doing this? Are the BBC going to come in and stamp all over that? And because they've been government funded effectively and funded by the licence fee, are they going to stamp all over that and, you know, make all the work that those people have done somewhat redundant?
I can't imagine it being the case, because he's announced a whole raft of cool new things going on, so they can't fund all of them that much.
It's a strange thing for them to be doing as well, at a time when the license fee has been effectively cut back over the next few years and they can't even afford to make more than half a dozen episodes of Doctor Who in a year, that they decide to set up
Tony has a particular axe to grind over this,
that they decide to set up, you know, something like this, which isn't really part of their core remit. But I mean, I welcome it.
It's public
but
service.
But it's a surprise. But, I mean, like when they made the BBCs and put them into schools in the 1980s, you know, that wasn't part of their core remit.
But it was incredibly successful.
It was, but it wasn't sustainable.
No, but it didn't need to be.
It triggers it. It's enough to kick it off.
You know, everyone remembers that everyone of a certain age. Sorry,
Mark, I don't remember.
remembers the BBC micros in schools and, you know, remembers the use of them, and you could probably stick a BBC micro in front of a number of people of that age and they'd still be able to
recall 20 go to 10
mode 7 and all that. So it's certainly stuck in a lot of people's minds, and if they can do the same thing for, you know, children of this era, then maybe that's a good thing.
Cool.
Mm. In unrelated news, Gnu is 30 this month.
Wow.
30 years.
It's a sort of bison, isn't it?
It's actually not Unix.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It provides the libraries, compilers, utilities that are usually run on the Linux kernel, and Herd and others.
Don't forget Herd.
Yep, and others, to create a complete Unix-like OS.
So this is
if
why,
you didn't know that.
This is why it's called GNU/Linux.
No, it's not. No, it's
sometimes.
Not. No, it's not.
And this is actually older than Mark.
It is. GNU is older than me.
Wow.
It's about 5 years older than I am.
So it started by Richard Stallman, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
And
originally. A few collaborators.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a good film. What's it called?
The open source film where they talk about...
Revolution OS.
Revolution OS.
Get in there. So, yeah, it's worth looking at. It's open and available on YouTube and various places.
Successfully.
legally and all that. but it's worth doing because there's a little background to the history of why Stallman set up GNU and why he, you know, how it was... the first 10 or 15 years of it. And
Well, it was quite a core decision that affected the way that what became GNU Linux/Linux/just Linux on its own.
Stop it.
because he made a very conscious decision not to start writing his own kernel at that point and started to create all the tools and the tool chain that you would need to start developing software in a free way. Mm. So
I thought aim for the kernel first, but then that was too hard. Let's go shopping and make the other bits.
Right, second time you said let's go shopping.
Is he said it before we started as well.
Right. So to start off, because writing things like tar and an editor and all that sort of stuff and a compiler was enough to start a tool chain through which people could build more complex products.
Right. To bootstrap it.
The bootstrap, yeah. Which he ran on proprietary Unix until such a time that a suitable alternative was developed either by GNU Project or by somebody else.
As it happened.
In Finland.
Yes. Yes. So, yes, well, congratulations, GNU. You're 30. 20 years younger than Doctor Who.
So there's a nice quote, actually, that said, to begin with, GNU will be a kernel, plus all the utilities needed to write and run C programs, as Tony says. Editor, shell, C compiler, linker, assembler, and a few other things. After this, we will add a text formatter, YACC, yet another compiler thing, an Empire game, a spreadsheet, and hundreds of other things. We hope to supply eventually everything useful that normally comes with a Unix system. Well, I think they've pretty much succeeded.
Yeah.
You could certainly have a working, useful system with just Linux and GNU software on top.
Yep. Yes. Yes, because GNU software includes a lot of graphical tools these days as well. It's not just the command line stuff.
Yes, although you'd have to have X, which isn't a GNU thing.
Yeah, or you could use XMIR.
Which also isn't a GNU thing.
Yeah. Okay, so Intel has announced the Galileo. It's not a space probe. It is, in fact, a small open-source hardware device.
Is it round or flat?
It's flat.
Oh, that's very good. I like that.
It's a bit lumpy, actually.
It's got lumps on it, but it is an x86-based open hardware device with Arduino compatibility. It's got a 32-bit Quark system on a chip in place of the 8-bit Atmel microcontroller found on Arduinos, which means it's capable of running pre-compiled code. You don't have to recompile it for special architectures and stuff.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it's capable of running x86 code.
And now Mark will explain how it properly works.
Yes, go on then, Mark. Well, how am I wrong?
Well, basically, it's an x86 chip like the chip in your PC. So it can run considerably more advanced code than Arduino can because an Arduino is a microcontroller, not a microprocessor.
Yes.
And it's also got 32 bits rather than 8 bits like the Arduino does, but it's compatible with the Arduino. So anything which you've written for an Arduino will run on this. And it's also got the same socket that an Arduino has on top, which means that you can plug in Arduino shields into this device.
Okay.
So they've been working.
I could open the Arduino IDE on my laptop, plug one of these Intel things in, and hit the button to send my. What are they called? Sketches.
Sketches.
That seems to be what they're saying, yes.
Wow.
So I could point my Christmas lights.
You could.
You can have x86 compatible Christmas lights.
Yeah.
I think, just for clarity's sake, I did say most of those words that you said.
Just in a different order.
Why would you want this? What's wrong with an Arduino? It has more ports on it, as I saw.
Right.
And yes, it's got a few extra bits. It's got like Ethernet built in,
and has it got video out as well?
I didn't see if it had video out.
I thought
out.
It did, and the video. Someone can correct me, but pretty sure I saw the video was Power VR based, which means not open source.
Interesting,
But I would be willing to.
Yeah, I mean, I think basically the reason that they're making this is because there's currently no small open source hardware devices which use x86. Everything's using ARM, and they want people to be using x86. So they've been looking at how they can sort of try and carve themselves a slice of that market.
Well, you can find out yourself when you get hold of one from November. Laura, what's next?
So back on the security politics, there's details of the legal proceedings against LavaBit, the encrypted email provider that recently shut itself down, and they've been unsealed. The proceedings, that is.
Right.
That's quite a long sentence.
Yes.
They were sealed. So the guy who started LavaBit and his lawyer couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
And there was some bizarre TV interview where there was a part where he couldn't even divulge some of the information to his own lawyer.
Yeah. Which is surely
shockingly bad.
Yeah.
But now it's been, some of it has been unsealed, some of the detail. Yes.
So sorry.
And I read something that said that he's finally given in to the initial demand, but they're not interested now. They don't want the initial demand. They want whatever it's escalated to.
Mm. Mm. So they initially asked, it talks about them asking him for the details of a specific user. They don't actually say that it's Edward Snowden, although it's widely believed Edward Snowden used LavaBit for his email. So chances are it was his email that they were after.
Yeah.
And then they went, no, let's have it all.
But yeah. I thought in the original thing, when he shut it down, that he actually said on that thing on his website that he wasn't bothered about giving it for a specific person as long as they had the usual warrants and things. He was fine. He'd done that before. It's because they said they wanted everything and just unfettered access.
And at one point they wanted the SSL key.
Yeah, that was specifically they wanted the SSL key so that they could essentially intercept everyone's traffic without them knowing
and
see
what he objected
everyone
to.
Was saying.
So,
he provided that, didn't he?
he printed it
in a special way.
Yes, he printed the SSL key, which is, if you've ever looked at an SSL key, it took up 11 pages in 4-point type.
Right, and it's basically just random alphanumeric characters.
And they said, well, you know, we could make a mistake typing it back in again.
Oh, I'm sure that became a shocking revelation.
Don't fall into that trap. What you want to do is type it incorrectly first time. Yeah. Go for it. Welcome to my world of 1985. Type Spectrum games.
Maybe BBC ones.
Yeah, they weren't in 4-point type though.
But interesting,
they never worked though.
His SSL certificate's now been revoked for LavaBit, which is understandable, really, because it's now been leaked effectively. Yeah. So it's now not secure. So we're not quite sure whether it was the guy who runs LavaBit or the domain. This SSL certificate provider, GoDaddy, who revoked it, but whoever did, it's probably wise.
He shut it down anyway, hadn't he, the service, so I guess it's probably academic, as it were.
Yes.
And finally, in gaming news...
Oh, Tony, tell us!
The final announcement from Valve's Living Room initiative revealed designs for a new controller that will be compatible with their new SteamOS system, as well as an existing Steam game.
Tell us about the controller,
Tony. Are you looking forward to it, Tony?
It's lumpy and smooth at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a sort of grey colour. it's a sort of grey colour.
Is it? And what's unusual about this controller, which we haven't seen before?
Mainly that I've looked at it.
Have you?
That is what is most unusual about it.
The big unusual thing is that it's not got joystick nubs that you normally put your thumb on and move up and down, left, right. It's two giant circular touch areas.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes. And, and a touch screen in the middle.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to have a play with it. It looks quite fun.
Yeah, they had Steam, Valve had some game developers over to their offices to evaluate it and have a look at it. And once the news had broken, the embargo was then lifted and loads of people started writing reviews and talking about their experience with it. Seems generally positive, even though a lot of people looked at it and went, what on earth is that? How can that possibly work? We'll have to wait and see.
Cool.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
It's time to catch up on everything that's been going on in the Ubuntu community in the last 2 weeks. Brackets, not really everything, close brackets. But one of the first things that we found out about was the French Armed Forces, who are switching 37,000 PCs to...
Have switched.
Yeah, well, yes, okay. Have switched 37,000 PCs to open source software running on Ubuntu, and in doing so have cut their costs by 40%. And Alistair Christman very kindly sent this in, although we had already seen it ourselves. But please do send us your news stories if you see them out there. It's much appreciated.
Yes, this is quite cool. So this has been a sort of gradual process over a number of years. They initially switched to using from Microsoft Office to using OpenOffice and Open Document format for everything. And then once that was sort of ingrained, they then switched over to Ubuntu and now sort of use fully open source software on their desktops. And they've saved a lot of money, which is a good story.
Yeah, they started off in 2008 by switching 5,000 PCs to Ubuntu, and then a 20,000 followed in 2011, and now it's up at 37,000. That's a lot.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Do you think they have landscape licenses?
I think they have a contract with Canonical to provide support.
Oh, okay.
And that usually comes with some additional services. I don't know. I actually flat out don't know what they have, and it probably wouldn't be wise for me to speculate.
No. I'm surprised you even said that much, to be honest.
Well, no, that's been...
Plead ignorance, it's always believable.
Yeah, for me, yeah. So, I think it's good news. It's nice, It's nice to see large organisations saying good things about converting to free software.
It's specifically the French gendarmerie, so it's like our police force, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Similar, yeah. One of the things that we've found in this country is that armed forces and that sort of thing often use very old versions of operating systems because they can't afford to upgrade to newer hardware. You don't want your battle cruiser running on, Vista. So it runs on, very old... like NT4, but it's been running for a decade, so it's stable and reliable, and they know how it behaves.
I don't think that's unique just to the military. I think that happens a lot.
Banks.
Well, anywhere where you've got a lot of time and energy invested in something that currently works.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
If it works.
Exactly. My optician...
Windows XP at work.
My optician has a machine that has a clunky old version of Windows 95.
Yeah.
On a laptop connected to a machine that's used to do eye tests. And he can't replace it because he can't afford the new machine that requires XP or above. And he can't replace the laptop because any new laptop he has generally doesn't have a serial port, and the software that works for that doesn't work on. It's just, why touch it? So he generally just doesn't touch it. And I've tried to stay well clear as well.
It's fine until the day it falls over.
You don't want to be IT support for your optician.
No. In release news, Mir and Xmir will no longer debut as the default display server for the desktop release of Ubuntu 13.10.
Oh.
As in an announcement to the Ubuntu Devil mailing list, Ollie Rees, I think, emailed saying Xmir is not ready yet.
Yes, stop. It was Ollie. Yes.
Yes.
Stop. This desktop environment is not ready yet. /graphics
even
server.
This compositor. Yeah.
So hopefully it will land in time for the next for the LTS release.
So Mir is going to be the display server on the phone.
Yes.
On Ubuntu Touch, which arrives in 1 week from now if you're listening live.
And minus
tomorrow.
No.
If you're listening next week.
Yes, but if you're listening next
today.
Week, yes, if you're listening, if you're listening next week, you've downloaded the wrong
confusing.
Episode.
Yeah,
because this is going out for tomorrow.
That's right.
So it's about a week, give or take.
Yeah.
So
which
it's
episode
going
are we
to
on
be
now?
In
no, last week was.
Yes, if you're calling in about.
So we're on last week's now, aren't
it's
we?
It's not ready for the desktop, but it is ready for the phone.
No, Mir on Mir. The phone.
There's not going to be any Xmir on the phone.
There's not going to be Xmir on the phone.
What's
so
the
Xmir is the thing that allows you to run what we affectionately call legacy. You ask me what Xmir is every single time.
I know, and I think you start talking and I kind of glaze over.
Righto.
But I'm curious what Exmere is different from.
No, I'm not going to say it because you're just going to ask me again next time.
Well, you know, not everybody listens to every episode. Like, they don't get...
Well, you shoot your rhythm.
I'm asking on behalf of the listeners. In the same way that people...
Oh, for a friend.
People don't get... People don't get that Tony is the only person that isn't interested in games news.
Yeah.
Because we don't mention that every time.
Right, yes. Okay.
Right.
Well, this is too complicated.
But that's in the next episode, so we'll come back to that later.
So what else has been happening in the Ubuntu community?
Well, who can say? Laura?
Oh, I could say. Maria Bonifan has blogged... I read that as boggled. Blogged about the worldwide availability of Ubuntu as a pre-installed OS on retail PCs.
Oh, good on her. Was there any really interesting piece of information in there?
Yes. The fact that it's not just India and China.
Yeah, it's really
she said
cool.
It used to be really hard.
Yeah. Right.
But she talks about like all the different countries and the kind of offerings that are available in each country and what sort of places they're available in. It's really interesting. It's worth a read.
Because there are all these little stores around China, aren't there, that are Ubuntu branded.
India and China.
And China.
Yeah.
So that's where you might expect to find more people who can literally rock up and buy one.
I know, you know, people give a stick and say, oh, well, why aren't you in, you know, my local store that's 500 yards from my house? Okay, that would be nice, you know. For everyone everywhere.
Where in the world are you?
But we've got to get started somewhere, and we happened to get started in India and China, and it was pretty successful. And now it's other countries like Mexico and some European countries, and then further and further, and eventually, yeah, we will be everywhere. But it actually takes a bit of time, and it's hard.
Hmm. Apparently, there was a US campaign with Asus for a web-based sales campaign on Amazon.com, and their netbooks were pre-installed with Ubuntu. That was on Amazon.
It was the US where they had the big banner ads as well, wasn't it? The billboards.
Russia.
It was Russia, was it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's the same difference.
Yeah, big... Not just an expert on gaming, but also geography. Moving on.
Yes, Mark, tell us about the next item.
A discussion has been taking place on the Ubuntu desktop list about the possibility of staying with the current version of GNOME and GTK until after 14.04 LTS, as there might not be enough resources to dedicate to the update.
So currently we ship, 3.8 in Ubuntu 13.10, which is about to come out next week or today.
Yeah.
And in the current release, just released by the GNOME Foundation upstream, is 3.10.
Yeah.
So by the time 14.04 lands, it'll be 3.12.
Yeah.
So the conversation is about... Once 14.04 hits, do we want to jump forward to 13.10 or 3.10 of GNOME or 3.12 of GNOME, or do we want to hang back on 3.8 because we know that currently works and stabilize that all the way up to 14.04 and keep it in 14.04? And it's been a heated discussion. You know, some people saying you should move forward because upstream are moving forward and you're holding back and you're going to make it harder for people who are developing apps targeting the latest GNOME.
Yeah.
It's worth a read.
Yeah. Cool. The next UDS has been announced. It's going to happen on Tuesday, the 19th of November through to Thursday, the 21st of November.
Where's that going to happen?
It's virtual. It's going to happen
in your computer.
Coming to a computer near you.
I think mine's big enough.
As long as you are over 18, you can take part. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you are not allowed, and we don't want to hear from you.
That's slightly misconstruing how it works.
Okay. It's only Google who doesn't want you to be there.
True. It's only the Hangouts. You can still participate via IRC.
Only the Hangouts on air.
And maybe you could get your mum or dad to click the I am over 18 button for you.
You could, is this it, dear? Is this where you want to be?
Large what? Right. The deadline for session proposals is the 1st of November. So if there's something you'd like to see talked about, then do it by then.
Yeah, they're trying to get the sessions nailed a bit earlier because in previous some of the feedback we've had after each of these virtual UDSs, a survey goes out asking for feedback on how could we improve this, and one of the things that's come back is that the schedule is kind of dynamic and changing and the sessions aren't set in stone early enough. So people can't schedule their time into which sessions to be in. And
sounds like OCCAM.
Yeah, sounds like every conference really. Yeah. But, you know, we should be able to do this because it's not like we're all flying out to the same place. We can find some time to do this.
Cool.
The Ubuntu Developer Portal has been updated with new streamlined content. And the links work now, which is nice. Amount of times I've thought, oh, I'll do some Ubuntu development and not been able to find any documentation because all the links were broken. But now all the ones which are there work, which is very good.
Yes, this is David Pinola and Michael Hall have been working on this to get developer.ubuntu.com all up to speed because we've got this new SDK and we've got the phone coming out and we want people to be able to actually write apps.
Fantastic. Well, check it out if you're interested in development.
Yes.
And finally, there has been a new Linux podcast launched. We don't normally talk about the competition, but...
Well, they're not really competition.
That's true. In so many ways.
Way better.
So these are the people who brought you the Tux Radar podcast, which was the podcast associated with Linux Format magazine.
Yes, indeed.
So why they started a new podcast?
Because they've quit Linux Format.
Oh, all of them?
Some of them.
Quite a few of them. I think three of the people who presented... Radar and no longer working for Linux Format.
Linux Format only had about three full-time people working on it.
So in the very last episode of Tux Radar, at the beginning, they were kind of lamenting their day and said that some people had been made redundant from the publisher.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they said that it was going to be the last one of with them, last Tux Radar with them, and... that some of them had quit. I think at least three of them had quit.
Yeah. Two of them had and one was about to.
So they set up a new podcast because, you know, it's quite a popular show and the guys are interesting and engaging, so they decided to set up a new one called Linux Lifestyle.
Yes. It's very, very similar to Tux Radar. If you liked Tux Radar, you'll definitely like Linux Lifestyle.
Mm. Cool.
And you'll probably like this show as well. Well, in fact.
Well,
yes. In happier news, we have a couple of events to talk about. The major one we want to tell you about, because this is the last time we're going to discuss events before it actually happens, is OgCamp.
It is OgCamp.
Yes. On the 19th and 20th of October, you need to be at the Liverpool John Moores University in Liverpool.
I knew that.
We have over 400 tickets gone. And basically, it's going to be a fantastic event. It's going to be packed with people. And we will, at some point, be stood on a stage in front of them, trying to say words into microphones.
Yes.
And if you've got the time, it's worth going up on the 18th, so you can come to the pub with us in the evening, and then possibly even stay until the Monday morning, so that you can come to the bar with us on the Sunday night.
Yes, it's, as much as it's a conference, it's also a social event. So we're going to Leaf on Bold Street in Liverpool on the Friday evening for a few gentle beers and hopefully not getting too carried away because we have to be up early on the Saturday morning. And then Saturday evening we have a hotel booked where we're going to be laying on some food.
Yes.
And there's going to be a party and more drink probably, I should imagine.
Yeah.
And then Sunday evening as it all winds down, if you want to join us for a couple of quiet, well, drinks again, you're more than welcome to do
You can drink cork.
You don't have to come to all or any of those, but we would love to see you there.
We have some fantastic speakers lined up and sponsors lined up, which I'll have to tell you about very quickly because we don't have a lot of time. We have Barney Brown, who's going to be talking about the Intercontinental Music Lab. We have Freaky Clown, who's going to be talking about security. We have Javier Ruiz from the Open Rights Group, who's going to be talking about Prism and mass surveillance. We have Alison Chaiken, I hope I pronounced that right, who's going to be talking about developing automotive Linux. Gary Smales is going to be talking about open publishing. And we've got lightning talks, and we've got a live show, and we've got a raffle. And we'll have a panel discussion somewhere in there as well.
Yes. As I said, there are going to be some freebies to the first 250 people through the door on Saturday, and if there's any left over on Sunday, but there won't be, I don't think, so be there on Saturday. We're hopefully going to give you some food, maybe some free pizza at lunchtimes as well, and there's going to be some surprises there for you to enjoy in some way. I don't think I can say much more without giving it away.
No.
But there will be good fun. There's also going to be, Leaf will be at the event as well, selling tea, coffee, cakes, and everything you need to get you through the weekend.
And I'll just quickly to thank our sponsors, LGMU Open Labs, who gave us the venue, Bytemark, who are helping fund the event, who do hosting and VPSs and stuff, bytemark.co.uk. Ubuntu, supported by Canonical.
Who are they?
Funny that. You probably know who they are if you're listening. Ubuntu.com, Canonical.com. We're funded also by donations from the Ubuntu community. Transitive Technologies, who... do
open source monitoring.
There we go. And they have
other things.
Yes, and they've donated some money and some prize, star prize for the raffle.
Yeah. Are we saying what it is?
I think we already have.
Okay.
It's a Nexus 7.
It's
a new
one. Nexus 7.
ThoughtWorks are also helping fund the event. What do they do?
There's a whole blog post about
There's a whole blog post on opcamp.org. And finally, MongoDB have donated some prizes for the raffle, so thank you to them.
Indeed.
And that's about all we've got time for.
Yes, so come along, and we hope to see you there. It is going to be absolutely awesome. And if you see us without a drink in our hands, buy us one.
That's all for this episode. Join us next time when we'll be interviewing Ross Gardler from Microsoft, reading your feedback and making your life a little bit easier with Sequan Line Love. Actually, I should say he's from Microsoft Open Labs.
Open Technologies.
Open Technologies.
And the Apache Software Foundation.
Yes.
So, yes. Excellent.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.